So I have a problem with this because I don't think it's a necessary ordinance. It's kind of like we put things in the Constitution I don't agree with. I don't think we necessarily need this.
And the reality is we have a city to operate, and I'm tasked with operating the city. And we have two gentlemen back there who are tasked with keeping us safe and tasked with adhering to state law. And to not do this and only give ambiguity to our community response specialists, to our community as a whole, for a state law that we must adhere to or be sued, that's not a palatable solution.
We've been talking about this all morning, the camping bans, A and B ban. The A ban, which is on private property and on commercial property, unless you have the permission of the private property owner. And then the B ban, which is to enforce the state HB 1365, that now the county is actually taking up tomorrow. They are also going to pass. Both of those passed on first reading, second reading still to come. The first voice you heard was Charles Baer, second voice, of course, Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mayor joins us now. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but you know, if people were kind of new to the conversation, just to get us up to date, the B ban is to give teeth so that you have something to do to defend against the potential lawsuits coming in January for camping on public areas. The A ban is to expand the definition in order to solve the problem that we are experiencing with homeless people camping on private property and on commercial property, right?
That's correct. Exactly. Yeah. The public, obviously is to adhere to 1365, and the private is to try to, you know, balance making sure that people have access to services who need it and all those other things that we're doing. But also, as we can both, give anecdotal examples across the city, across the county, that has really tied our hands with some of these private property issues and with not much that we can do. We're not trying to impede on anybody's property rights. We're trying to keep people safe, and we're trying to make sure that we balance those two things. And so so the private property is trying to address those the best way we can.
You made a really interesting comment. You said in the council meeting, you said that when you meet with your 350 mayors across America and with your, you know, mayoral leadership classes, that like nobody has solved this. But I got some texts in response to that, and it's my own observation that, you know, we just don't have this problem like in Gulf Breeze or in Destin or in some other places. It's sort of like, yes, a lot of people have this problem, but it doesn't quite seem to be everywhere. Have you managed to figure out why it's some places but not everywhere, and why it is such an intractable problem in the places where it does exist?
The best way to describe this, when we talked about housing the other day and you said, man, wouldn't it be nice if we could identify, you know, A and B and C, and we could all have clarity just as a society around what affordable and workforce and all those things mean. Multiply that ambiguity by times 50, and then you have the homeless situation, which is, you know, everybody's got a different opinion. You could see someone on MLK Plaza and say, oh, my gosh, homelessness is out of control. You can look at the Excel spreadsheet that our community response specialists send me every single week with the dozens of interactions that we have and where we get people put into services. And you could look at that and say, man, you know, the city's being proactive. Maybe not every person that's homeless that I see on the street is on drugs or, you know, people have been a flat tire away from being homeless. And so everybody, you talk about not being able to ever really get a full grasp on what people's you believe it's fact about this issue. And I think that's what makes it so complex. There's probably a little veil of truth in all of it, you know, a little in some way. Sometimes we take it a little further and stereotype certain situations that the city is or isn't doing this, that the homeless population is or isn't doing this. So that's why it's very, very almost impossible to master, is because what is success? So if success is, I don't see someone on my drive to work today, that might be success and it might not be.
Right.
It depends on what's going on. And so, listen, why 350 mayors? I'm probably one of the smallest cities in U.S. Conference of Mayors, certainly in the leadership group, maybe the second or third smallest. You see more visible homelessness where there's bigger populations. So you want to use an example like Gulf Breeze. Take Gulf Breeze, for example. Where is, if these are folks that are panhandling, are wanting, you know, access to pedestrian, where is that center in Gulf Breeze? Just as an example. So, you know, I mean, it, you know, it's Highway 98, which is probably not, an ideal place for someone who's not wanting a hand up, but wanting a hand out. And so naturally, you're going to see more visible homelessness in areas where there's a larger population base. That's just
I very much agree with your assessment that it's such a complicated problem, because take any given unhoused person or homeless person, and then, you know, look across the spectrum of things that might be true or not true of them. Has a job, doesn't have a job, uses alcohol, uses drugs, doesn't use either one or the other, has a pet, doesn't have a pet, has kids, doesn't have kids, has a car, doesn't have a car, has enough money to afford shelter once in a while, has mental illness, doesn't have mental illness, wants help, doesn't want help. And all of a sudden, you've got 40 or 50 different combinations, and solving a global problem, as you say, the end result is people really just don't want to see them, on the way to work. How do you know you're winning without dashboard or comprehensive research? I mean, it's hard to know. I know you're a big devotee of having the data, having the information, studying the problem. I think a community dashboard that has as much information as possible about who is, what age, if they're getting treatment, where they're at in the process would help us feel like we are or are not making progress. But I wanted to give you a chance to respond because I threw a lot at you, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, listen, that's exactly right. We all define success or lack thereof in this topic completely differently, whether you're a nonprofit that's helping reduce homelessness, whether you're someone that goes to a bar on Palafox and sees someone. Everybody defines it differently, and that's what makes it kind of hard to tackle. It almost, perhaps, depending on who you're talking to, unattainable. All you have to do is go read my email, the spectrum of emails from I'm over-policing homelessness, and then I'll get one an hour later that says I'm doing nothing about it. It's a tough situation, but we just got to stick to do it, helping people that need a hand up, and our citizens. For when you talk about aggressive panhandling and things like that, that's my biggest recommendation to people: is do not support panhandlers. Not support panhandlers. If you want you want less visible homelessness, then ask your family and your friends to not be giving money out of their window. That does not solve any problem. We have tons of services available here that can help people who need help. And I think that's what I think cities battle, for the most part.
Yeah, it is.
It's a tough situation.
Yeah, sure. It's a self-inflicted wound. We're generous, we're helpful, we're a high Christian population, and we feel good about giving. We want to give. I mean, this goes back to my Leadership Pensacola class did a thing on a better way to give. Avoid the pan, and you're right. You get what you feed, right? And so we're reinforcing a behavior that we're trying to curb. Other topics I wanted to make sure that we talked with you about at least a little. Did I hear you right and say that Marina Corey with DPZ is going to come work on Community Maritime Park?
Yeah, that's right. So
that's a huge win for us. That's great. I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's all right. No, during our conversation about Parcel 5, there's lots of conversation about making sure that what in 2019, the West Main Master Plan, that the citizens said, this is what we want, making sure that we held to that. So if you recall, before the lease got approved, we kind of had her analyze it and give her thoughts. And we made, we had the Dawson group make some adjustments to that. And I think that was appreciated by the council and by the citizens. And so I said, well, after that meeting, I said, why don't we take it a step further? Why don't we hire her as our consultant of the city? So if she's in the room as this building is being designed, and really a process I'd like to repeat at every parcel that we do there, as long as I'm the mayor, is to say, hey, now we have – no one can refute what Marina believes meets the West Main Master Plan because, I don't know, she wrote it.
Right.
I think that will be really valuable. She doesn't get some authoritative, approval or anything like that, but her job is to be in the room with Gensler – who's a world famous architect. They'll do a great job, but she's able to just be in there, listen to those conversations and be able to just make sure that our plan is reflected. So that was just trying to take it another step further and give that level of comfort to our council and to our citizens to make sure that that.
No, I think it's great. I think that one of the big failures at the county is that they brought in DPZ to do the one master plan at OLF 8. And then because of personality conflicts and they couldn't, they decided that they didn't want to work with her again for the Beulah master plan. That would have been the perfect thing. They know the community. They're fantastic. Right. And they know how to integrate with the other stuff. But no, that's a big win for the city. Congratulations on that. Let's just talk briefly. We don't have a lot of time, but the Cobb Center, what is the plan?
Yeah, so it's about a $1.7 million lift. Andrew, I can't go on your show for too many weeks without having something broken that I need to fix.
I know. A lot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just you name it. But a Cobb Center, it was on its way to where Malcolm Young was found when I got here, which, and I said that during the Malcolm Young saga, was, hey, this building is probably too far gone. And and when the council in 2020 pulled $715,000 away from this project, they signed the death certificate at that time. And now we have an opportunity to not let that happen on my watch. So it's about a $1.7 million lift for the roof, for the Glulam arches that were much debated, that were, you know, I don't know if we can find that guy that said they're going to do them for $200,000, but our price is $1.7 million. So, you know, and I think this only reinforces this is a community center in much better shape than Malcolm Young was in. And we're, our price tag just for the outside envelope, nothing inside, is $1.7 million. So, but this is the right thing to do. This is a community center that is in the public good. It's being used by our city and our children right now, not leased out to someone else. And we have a chance to catch it before it gets to where Malcolm Young got. So very excited to work with Councilwoman Broughton on that. And it's a vital part of that Eastside neighborhood. So Roy Jones Jr. was there with us, Commissioner May.
Yep.
So it was a very good day in the city to make to start the process and announcement that we're going to save that building.
And also, just, I mean, as a sort of a note, a very similar architectural style as the Malcolm Young Center. And people who don't maybe know the two of them separately might have been confused. Like, I thought we tore that down, you know, because they look so similar,
they
right?
Look very similar, yeah.
I'll just give you 20 seconds. They're going to tear down the home you lived in that also was lived in by, who was the historic figure that lived there and all of a sudden? Vince Wibbs, right?
Did Vince Wibbs live there? I don't know about that.
I thought that's what Channel 3 said, was that Vince Wibbs lived there at one time. Maybe I heard them wrong.
Well, I was 2 years old when I left there, so I don't have a lot of memories. But nonetheless, you know, look, it's kind of interesting. People, you know, this is private property rights and someone's ability to do something.
Yep.
And this is our government in action. We said, hey, we put in a rule that says we can delay a demolition for 60 days to be able to further analyze it. I think that process, you know, we'll see what happens at that ARB meeting this week, but I expect that to take place. And look, it's a dilemma. You know, the builder's a good Pensacola person, Pensacola family that is invested in the city. And if that's their right to do on private property, you know, again, you know, I'd love to conserve every piece of character that we have within reason. And if that happens here, great. But again, certainly no one can say that they're not more personally invested in this this project than me, in terms of this being the home I came to after Baptist Hospital on March 25th, 1984. But, you know, nonetheless, we've got to navigate those two things. And so it's a difficult situation. And we'll see how it plays out and see what their plans ultimately are.
I may have been wrong about the Vince Wibbs. It was somebody, and I was looking on the WEAR story to see if I could remember who it was. But if it was Vince Wibbs and it was two mayors, then I think we probably ought to keep it. But yeah, I get that you have the process. Hey, the lightning round, we always like to end with the quick round. First question for you. Last week it was beer and pizza, National Beer and Pizza Day. Beer is obviously the right drink to go with pizza. What's the wrong drink to go with pizza?
Yeah, I mean, I've never craved a glass of Cabernet or anything.
It's too much of a socioeconomic clash to have red wine with your pizza. All right, I get you. A lot of movie trilogy. Yeah. What's that?
I said, or milk. That would be a weird one, too.
That's right. Super weird, John Pickens. Super weird to drink milk with your pizza. John drinks milk with his pizza. A lot of movies out there, trilogies plus 3, 8, 10 series long. What's your personal favorite trilogy plus movie series?
Remember, you know, I always get beat up on the show because I haven't seen Star Wars.
It's okay. We're not gonna focus
Indiana
on that.
Jones. Yeah, so I'm trying to even think. It would be some... It's not going to be a fun answer, Andrew. It's not going to be, you know, I'm trying to think. It's going to be like, you know, some three versions of Dumb and Dumber or something. Remember, that's my favorite movie.
Naked Gun. All right, fair. No, I'll let you slide on that.
That's a pretty good one.
And then the last one, and
Nothing comes top of mind. I don't watch all those sci-fi movies.
You're busy running businesses in a city. Who's got time to watch all that TV? I got you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do. last one. You'll like this because you're a sports guy. Would you rather have your team win a blowout victory that's boring because it's such a blowout, or lose a narrow, nail-biter, exciting, thrilling game?
Oh, I mean, absolute blowout. We're not here to make friends. You know, we're 56-0, 100-0. I mean, there's nothing worse than an L. I mean, a painful loss. We can't handle that. We can win 200-0. That's okay.
Well, there's a lot of people on your side on that one. That's not my view, but that's fair. That's why I like to ask. Mayor D.C. Reeves, always a pleasure, sir. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you so much for the time.
All right. Thank you.